This is A Wild Conversation.
Hi, I'm Callum Hughes. I'm a zookeeper here at the Greater Vancouver Zoo.
And I'm Ashley Wysick, also keeper here at the Greater Vancouver Zoo.
And today on A Wild Conversation, we're going to be talking about tricksters in honor of April Fool's Day.
Woo! It's coming up.
Before we get into that conversation, though, I have to make an apology. I made a mistake. Unfortunately, when I was talking about extinct species and I brought up the name of the dog that found the black-footed ferret, I said Shell or Shelly. The true name is actually Shep. I am very ashamed.
Well, you got the beginning of their name right. So at least give yourself that.
It's so important that we give the proper names because, I mean, this dog found an extinct species or a species we thought was extinct. And that is a captive breeding program. And I put the wrong name.
Give him his due. Yeah. I get it.
So just to clarify, the dog's name is Shep that found the black-footed ferret that led to finding a population we did not know existed and our captive breeding program that exists today.
I'm sure that Shep will be relieved that you cleared that up.
So tricksters, April Fool's Day. It's a special day. It's kind of a day that you might go up to a coworker and in a cautious tone say something like, "You do know that you sent that message to everyone at work, right?"
That was always the day that my friends would come up to me in high school and be like, "You know, there's a test today, right?" Oh my God.
Exactly. They make the same faces Simba would make it when that stampede is coming by with the camera zoom in, you know?
Yeah.
That kind of face.
Oh my gosh. It's like, uh-oh.
And the animal kingdom is just full of tricksters.
Oh yeah.
This is kind of why we say survival of the fittest and not survival of the strongest, because there might be selection pressure for animals to be strong, but then there might also be smaller individuals that also find a way to pass their genes on to the next generation.
Survival of the craftiest.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Do you have any particularly crafty animals on your route?
I mean, I have a pretty crafty animal and he's very well named. His name is Mayhem.
His name is Mayhem,
and he's one of our red foxes.
Oh.
And he is such a funny boy. You have to be really careful when you're feeding them, because we actually have two red foxes, Holly and Mayhem. And Mayhem's a bit more bold, and he will do things like run up, grab his food, hide it, run over, grab Holly's food, hide it, and then be like, "I has no food. Why haven't you fed me yet? I saw you. Take those." And sometimes, honestly, after he hides Holly's food, I'll go find it, pull it out, and give it to Holly.
Oh.
He's being so rude. Yeah, I trick him. I trick him right back.
Oh, so you trick the trickster.
Yeah. Also, we put bowls out there sometimes with, like, treats and stuff for things for them to smell, or yogurt. Sometimes we give him yogurt to eat. And every time he's done, he pees in the bowl. And it's awful.
Like, that's Foxby.
Yeah, it's awful. It's so smelly. So you have to be really careful picking up dishes in there because he leaves you presents.
I hear that's good luck somewhere.
Stop. No. Not Foxby.
I'm quite lucky. I don't think I have any crafty individuals on my route. The hoostock's pretty laid back. No one's trying to jump scare me that I know of. That might change. That's how they get you, really.
Yeah, you obviously don't work with any big cats because that's like a constant day thing. They're like, "Oh, can I freak her out today? Can I get her?" Oh yeah, Hannah does that. Although it's pretty funny, you can usually see her. She's
right.
Not the best at sneaking up on animals or anyone, but you see her out in the grass and she's kind of doing her thing, and then she spots you and all of a sudden she gets really low. She crouches and her ears go flat to her head and her eyes go wide, and you're just like, "Oh, she's gonna charge me. She's going to get me." And she has scared me once. She made me scream, and it made her life. You should have seen her. She was like prancing around, rolling in the grass. She's like, "I did it. I'm such a predator."
I love that. Because, I mean, it's not the same way we express it. We burst out laughing and roll on the ground. But you can see that emotion in her behavior,
yeah.
Right?
She was so funny that day. I was just like, "Oh, you really are a tiger."
Speaking of cats, did you know, like, it's not, like, fully documented, but it's been witnessed by a team of researchers. They found a margay. You know margays? That cat in South America that can rotate its ankle joints.
Okay, yeah.
It's a bit like an ocelot, but it spends much more time up in the trees.
Mm-hmm.
They found it mimicking the call of a baby tamarin monkey. To try and trick the adults to getting close by. Oh my gosh,
that is so rude and so smart.
Smart, right? Terrifying. Yeah. And apparently, according to locals, they've seen pumas or jaguar doing it, apparently. Oh, yeah. I say apparently because there's no documented evidence yet, and I don't think it's been fully studied or looked into. But this was a team of researchers following these tamarin monkeys, and they noticed that these animals responding to a call that wasn't quite a baby's call, but sounded like one.
Okay.
Which, imagine you're in the woods somewhere and you hear the cry of like a young child or something, and you come up and it's a predator that's lured you in.
From now on, if I hear a baby crying in the woods, I think in general, if you hear a baby crying in the woods, you should at least have a buddy system going.
Yeah, that's definitely how they get you in the horror movies. Yes.
I don't trust this.
Probably not a good April Fool's joke, because, you know, the punchline is April Fool's and now you're dinner.
Yeah, not recommended. Don't pull that one on people.
Do you have any mimics here at the zoo? Anything that can mimic, like, us and trick us?
Oh my gosh. Let me think about that.
What about Chuva, the parrot?
Oh, yes. Chuva is so funny. She actually kind of freaks me out sometimes.
Yeah.
Because once she really starts to get to know you, she actually mimics your own voice. So she has all these voices from all the different keepers, and she kind of yells out, cracker, when she wants some food.
Yeah.
Or she yells hello from the other room if she can hear you in the other room. But every time I come see her, I'm always like, hi there. And she will mimic like the pitch of my voice now. So sometimes from the other room I hear, hi there, like exactly the way I say it. And it's like, oh gosh, what is happening?
That is why we have no voice activated locks here at the zoo.
Yeah, no kidding. She would unlock them all.
I think so I remember seeing a video of a parrot that actually learnt to get on someone's Siri shopping list.
Yep.
And the lady's like, can you read back my shopping list for me? It's like, strawberries. Strawberries, strawberries, strawberries. And it just keeps going, and the parrot's just sitting there in the background, just like, playing all cutesy and stuff.
Like, I just really want some strawberries, okay?
I wonder why parrots evolved the ability to mimic voices. Is that something?
It's not even just parrots, though. Like, quite a few birds have developed the ability to at least mimic other birds, too, right? Like, you think of Steller's jays, you know, they mimic birds of prey calls, you know, so in order to get everyone else out of that area.
That's pretty crafty,
right?
It sounds a lot like have you ever heard of the fork-tailed drongo in Africa?
No.
So this bird basically has basically acts the role of a corrupt security guard. So it will find a troop of meerkats sometimes. And what it'll do is like, hey, you guys look like you could use another sentry to look out for eagles and other predators. And it'll actually make alarm calls when the predators come nearby, and the meerkats will react to it. So it'll earn their trust. And then when it sees one that's got a really nice juicy morsel, whether it's a big scorpion or a cricket or something, a beetle larvae that it dug up in the dirt, it'll make that alarm call. No predators nearby. They all dash down their burrow, it swoops in and takes it.
That's so funny. But oh my gosh.
It gets even funnier because eventually the meerkats suss out, okay, you can't be trusted. We're not going to listen to what your alarm calls anymore.
And then that doesn't work out sometimes.
That would be bad if it was actually being honest that time. But then it will actually mimic the meerkat's calls.
Oh.
So it sounds just like the sentry, even though the sentry's going, what's going on? I'm supposed to be sentry today. And they'll dart under and it'll take whatever they've got, which is pretty crafty.
No, that's really, really smart. That's very interesting.
Yeah, it's like the kid who turns on the alarm at school so he can steal your lunch while everyone's running outside.
Yeah.
Probably going to get expelled for that, by the way. Suspended, but...
Yeah, that happened to one of the kids in my school, but it was accidental.
Oh.
He dropped one of his instruments and it leaned right up against the wall just perfectly and pulled it. Yeah.
Oh.
I remember that day.
Oh, man. But many animals also use camouflage to stay out of predators' ways.
Mm-hmm.
Any particular animals you can think of that are good at camouflage?
I mean, tigers usually, just Hannah's really bad at it. Which True. Is actually surprising because they're orange, black, and white. You would think there's no way that they can blend in. But even Hannah sometimes, when she actually, those big black stripes on her side. When she actually lays down in the grass sometimes, if you didn't already see her standing, you can't find her. Like, she's pretty excellent at hiding.
You should sometimes definitely see that documentary, like, Color on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
It's narrated by David Attenborough, who is amazing, by the way. I love his voice. And they were actually talking about how a tiger looks obvious to us because we're primates and we evolved to see color for fruit. What's poisonous, what's not, what's ripe, what's not. Whereas deer don't have that ability to see those colors. So they actually changed the color of the camera to the color frequencies that deer can see, which I don't know if they can actually see color, but the tiger is just practically invisible. You can only make it out because of the movements.
That's super cool. And sorry.
No, go for it.
I totally just remembered, because of your David Attenborough, one show I saw with a really good mimic is The Lyrebird.
Oh, yeah.
You've heard of The Lyrebird? They're nuts, though. Like, they can, the amount of sounds they can make is fantastic. Because what is it in the show that he was actually in? The Lyrebird is actually mimicking things like a car alarm and like the shutter of a camera. And then I was looking up other Lyrebird videos, and there's one in a facility where like people can actually walk past him, and he makes like the gun sound from someone's video game, like a pew 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 pew, and he like looks directly at you, and he's just going pew pew pew, like he's actually trying to shoot you.
Oh my god,
it's so funny. But they do that to impress. They do it a little differently because they do it to impress females.
Mm.
They have the more complicated and diverse their song, the more attractive they are. So they literally just take sounds from everywhere, right? Which is really cool.
That is really awesome.
Yeah.
There's, speaking of like mate selection, one really cool trick that I've seen is what cuttlefish do.
Mm.
Have you seen like, usually there'll be like a big male cuttlefish who will guard a female or a couple of females during mating season. But there are also these smaller males, and they have no chance of winning a one-on-one fight with this bigger male.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do is, because they can change color, is they actually will change their color to match that of a female. Or the female's patterns, and the big male will be like, whoa, I'm more, welcome in, you can join my bachelor pad.
He's like, don't mind me, I'm totally a lady.
Exactly, right? And then he will, while the male's distracted, maybe defending in another fight, he will mate with the female and pass on his genes, even though he's not the biggest, strongest male there.
But he's crafty.
Yeah. In fact, what they can actually do, which is really funny, is they can have half their body displaying the female colors towards the male on one side, and the other half displaying male colors towards the females on his other side.
That is complicated. Can you imagine if he accidentally got that mixed up? Oops.
Yeah. Oh, damn.
Uh-oh. Gotta get out of here.
And then, you know, maybe when that big male approaches him, he's like, oh, you know, look at the time. I gotta go. See you later. Bye. Call me. So, pretty cool, right?
It's super cool. Animals are just, they're nuts. I love them.
And it's interesting because some animals, they mimic out of behavior and some mimic out of instinct entirely.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's been selected for. So, like, when a baby bird mimics a poisonous species of caterpillar when it's a baby, it couldn't possibly know that that's a poisonous caterpillar. It's just been selected for because a chick that looks slightly like that caterpillar was less likely to be eaten, and the ones that look more and more like that caterpillar, even their movements, were the ones that got selected for.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas there are some that are able to look and make decisions based on past experiences.
Yeah.
Like, apparently that fork-tailed drongo is supposed to be, although not proven, an animal that understands theory of mind.
Oh.
Right?
Interesting.
So to make conclusions based on past experiences with specific individuals.
That's really cool.
Don't ever let a fork-tailed drongo near your Facebook, is what I'm saying.
Okay. Yep.
Or your data. Okay. Definitely don't let it get your data, no matter what it offers.
Who knows what it'll do with it. That's really interesting. So you're saying that you don't have very many animals that are like super tricky on your route.
Not that I know of.
So you've never had like the problem of one of them stealing something from you or making your life hard on purpose? Is that just a carnivore thing?
Well, I
actually, South American too, okay? Because Oh, wait, you used to work with our elk.
Yes.
Yes. Our female elk, Bridget.
Bridget, yes.
Bridget.
I remember Bridget, but she wasn't so much tricky in my experience as she was very demanding and quite bratty.
Well, Bridget is so funny. So I've heard stories from like other keepers who used to work with her, and it happened to me the other day. She will go through your vehicle when you're not looking. Like, she comes right up, and the other day I had set up a whole bunch of pieces of cantaloupe that I was giving out to everyone for food enrichment, and I turn around and she has one in her mouth, and she was just like, thanks. I'm like, no, Bridget, not yet. Luckily, I managed to get the rest away from her, so everyone got a piece of cantaloupe, but one of our keepers has a story, I think from a few years ago, where she had brought a whole bunch of apples, like an actual bag of apples, because she was planning to give out apples, and Bridget came running up and grabbed the bag and just ran off into the enclosure. She's like, this is great, thanks. And she's chasing after her, like, Bridget!
That is absolutely Bridget to a T. She inspects your Kubota to see if you've got food.
Yeah, that's why we have lids on our bins now. Animals are going through all of our stuff.
It's funny because some places they have to really get complicated. Like the raccoons in Toronto, they have to have these specific lock systems in place to make sure they can't open them up.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm glad we don't have that.
Yeah, don't have any problems with that kind of stuff. On carnivore, though, one of the things we do need to do is either cover, we need to have covered bins with actually like lids that click because of crows. Like you turn around, like you're even just opening a lock and the crows are inside your vehicle taking things away from you. And you're like, excuse me? Hmm. And one time what we started doing was we would just lay a big blanket or a big towel over like, oh, because we're just literally coming from the ACC to the cat house. And while you're parked there undoing your lock, they'll flip the towel back and take a bunch of meat. Like, you little buggers. Stop.
Those crows and ravens, they corvids in general, are so, so smart. And it's interesting because many animals actually inspire mythology as well, or stories. There's many. Yep.
And that reminds me of Loki.
Oh, yeah?
Speaking of mythology.
Go for it. Go for it.
You know Loki, right?
The jaguar?
Yeah, our jaguar. Yeah, he is named perfectly. He is such a little rascal. Like, so our jaguars are Jasper and Loki, the brothers. And Loki is so naughty. Just like ripping things apart, playing with toys in ways you don't really want him to play. So we had a keeper. She actually, anything you give him, he'll destroy. We had like this big tire. And we had basically turned it into, you know, those like big circular cat toys that have a little jingly ball inside.
And yeah.
So we made one of those out of a big tire with like a bowling ball inside, like the jaguar.
A little jingly ball inside?
No, it's the bowling ball. It's the jaguar version, okay?
Okay.
Yeah, turn around and the bowling ball's out. He was just like, thanks. I'm going to play with this now. What? No, you can't. Oh. And one time I gave him a big pool filled with water, and I was like, awesome, they can play in the water. No, tipped the pool right over, like flipped it over and ripped the pool in half.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, okay, they need metal pools. I'm sorry, I ruined that pool.
I wonder if it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, you name him Loki so he has to live up to that name,
right,
of mischief. And
we did it to ourselves.
But in like other stories, there are tales of many tricksters, which I think people love because, mm-hmm. you know, tricksters means that you get an individual who isn't the most powerful, who isn't the strongest, who completes tasks against all odds, right?
Like Loki.
Yeah. Like, except maybe not causing Ragnarok or the end of times, you know?
Okay, bad example.
Good ones, right?
Yeah.
So there's this one really cool trickster god from West Africa, also talked about in the Caribbean as well, named Anansi.
Okay.
And he's often depicted as a spider.
Oh.
Or a man spider sometimes.
Creepy.
But super cool.
Okay.
And he's the god of storytelling and I think knowledge. And it happened because one day he was really bored and realized that there were no stories in the world because they were all, they all belonged to a god up, the sky god. So he climbed up to the sky and he met with the sky god and said, listen, I want the stories, please. What do I have to do to get these stories? And the sky god said, all right, I'll give you these impossible tasks to do.
Of course.
in which he basically had to catch four of the most dangerous or elusive creatures in that area. I have to look at my phone for the names. Okay. Osebo the leopard, Onini the python, and Momboro the hornets, as well as the fairy, Momotia, I think so.
I can't help you with pronunciations, man. I'm awful, so.
I apologize for any mispronunciations. So he set off, right, to complete these tasks, but each of these were more powerful or dangerous than you can handle without a bit of trickery. So what he did was he went to the hornets and he had a gourd that was two gourds, right, and a banana leaf. So one gourd is full of water, and he poured some water on the banana leaf over his head, and he poured it on the hornets' nests. And as it got wet, he shouted to the hornets, "Oh, it's pouring down. Your paper nest isn't going to last much longer. Quick, quick, so your wings don't get tattered by the rain. Come into my empty gourd here, and I'll protect you from the rain." So the hornets all flew out, like, "Thank you, thank you." And they went straight into the gourd, and he sealed it shut.
Ooh.
And he took that to the sky god. Next, for the python. He went up to the python with this big palm branch, and he said, "Hey, could you help me out? Me and my wife had this big argument about whether or not you, the biggest, baddest snake in the entire land, was longer than this palm branch. Can you come down here by any chance and just see if you're longer? I was telling my wife you're way longer. There's no way." And the snake, of course, he was very prideful of his size, said, "Yes, I will come down and prove this once and for all." So he stretched himself out along this palm branch, and he said, "I can't quite get it. You keep moving. I can't really see. So I'll tell you what if I tie you to the branch, and that way you won't move and we'll know for sure, because I think you're longer." And the python said, "Yeah, sure, go for it." So he wrapped him up in webbing all along this branch, and he caught the snake, couldn't move. So he took him to the sky god. The next one was the leopard. In which he set up a pitfall trap right next to his favorite tree.
Okay.
Leopard falls into the trap, and he basically says, "Oh, hey, could you use a hand?" And the leopard's like, "Yeah, sure, no, that would be great." So he lowered down a tree that he'd bent down and attached by a string with some webbing, and when the leopard put his paw on it, he snapped the branch. The leopard went flying in the air and got more tangled up in the web in the tree. And so he wrapped him up and took him to the sky god. And then the last one was the invisible fairy, in which he had a wooden puppet that he crafted from some wood, and he attached some strings to it and put a little bowl of yam paste right on its lap. So he went to a spot where the spirit would be seen. The fairy spirit, which is invisible, you can't see it. Came up to the puppet, which was also covered in sap, by the way, so very sticky. And he said, "Oh, can I have some of the yam paste?" And he kind of flicked with the web so that it would nod its head, the doll. So he had some of the yam paste and said, "Thank you very much." But the doll said nothing. He said, "Hey, can you please say something? You're being kind of rude." And the doll said nothing. "If you don't say anything, I'm going to slap you in the face." So the fairy slaps the doll in the face and gets its hand stuck. And then slaps with another face and gets that stuck, and tries to push off and gets its feet stuck. And so he was able to wrap it up and take it up to the sky god. And then because of that, Anansi was given all the stories of the world and eventually shared that with mankind.
Interesting.
Right?
Wow.
I don't know if he did it because he was bored, because he was like, "Hey, these guys were pretty easy to fool. I wish there were some cautionary tales that we could, you know, warn people about people like me." Or maybe he was like, "Hey, I want people to know about my epic legends."
Right? I need to be able to tell people about all the amazing things that I do.
If anyone likes tales like that, I highly recommend Overly Sarcastic Productions on YouTube. They're pretty good.
Okay, I'm going to have to look that up. I don't think I've heard of them.
But yeah, the wildlife has many examples of tricksters. It's not just unique to people. Definitely a reminder to everyone on April Fool's Day, make sure your pranks are safe and whatnot, and know when to use your punchlines or just say April Fool's.
Yeah, be kind. Be kind.
Exactly. If anyone has any questions for us, please do not hesitate to contact us at podcast@gvzoo.com. I'm Callum Hughes.
And I'm Ashley Wysock.
And this has been
A Wild Conversation.